Our next case for argument this morning is Auto Owners Insurance Company against WebSolve Computing. Mr. Osborne.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is David Osborne. I represent the plaintiff appellant Auto Owners Insurance Company. The legal issue here is well-defined. It's been determined by a number of courts, and unfortunately, the courts have split upon that. Our main argument with respect to the main issue of TCPA coverage under the advertising injury language has been...
Excuse me. You're going to have to use English. What kind of coverage?
This is the advertising injury coverage under a commercial general liability policy.
English words rather than acronyms that only specialists know, I would appreciate.
Certainly, Your Honor. The invasion of privacy coverage under the advertising injury of the commercial general liability policy is what we've focused on, and what this court focused on in the American States versus Capital Associates case, which explains, frankly, better than I could, why this sort of claim is not covered under the identical policy language. The invasion of privacy policy language uses terms which clearly indicate that only a secrecy interest is meant to be covered rather than the less often used seclusional or intrusion upon seclusion branch of the privacy tort. And I don't mean to tread old ground here because that's all been well briefed, and as I said, the court has explained precisely why the policy language can't reasonably be interpreted the way that the district court did here. Now, after that decision came down, courts across the country have basically split, many of which have followed.
We're trying to find out what the Supreme Court of Iowa would do with the problem.
That's exactly right.
Why don't we certify this question to the Supreme Court of Iowa? I frankly don't understand that at all.
Well, because there's very little litigation in this area in Iowa.
Well, there seems to be quite a bit more than a little bit to me. But.
Well, there's quite a bit here in Illinois, in fact, involving the interpretation of the laws of several different states. There was another Iowa case here in the Northern District which did not come to this court. But in any event, the reason that we're urging, not strenuously, but urging that certification is not appropriate is because there hasn't even been TCPA or Telephone Consumer Protection Act or what some people call the blast fax statute. There hasn't even been an underlying case adjudicated in Iowa, so far as we can tell, not in any reported decision. And so the idea that...
that's why we certify. They don't have their own case, so we give them one. Isn't that the point of certification? Well, I don't understand that at all, but go ahead with your argument.
Well, we cited a few of this court's decisions with the proposition that...
One reason to certify is that the state court may never have an opportunity to give an authentic interpretation if all of the cases are being litigated in federal court. Does that seem to be true? Let me tell you one of the puzzles that I had here. There are an awful lot of these cases.
Yes.
I tried to find decisions by state courts of last resort on this subject and was able to turn up two.
And one of which was deciding the law of another jurisdiction, if I'm not mistaken. That's the Massachusetts case, was deciding New Jersey law. So I think the Illinois case is the only state Supreme Court deciding its own.
Yeah, the other one is Vermont.
Oh, very well. Yes, the Vermont.
There's one in Illinois and one in Vermont. Do you know of any others?
Well, there's the Massachusetts case, but as I said, they're applying, I think,
yeah,
New Jersey law.
It's not a... It's just like a diversity decision. They're trying to predict what some other court would do.
Right.
And, of course, predictions are cheap, and most of the cases that everybody has cited are one court trying to predict another court. Mm-hmm. Are there any other... It doesn't sound like you know of any other authentic decisions by...
State Supreme Court. No. But the point is, I think, with respect to certification, is that this issue is unlikely to ever arise in Iowa, And so why should they devote resources to
it? That sounds like the reason to certify it. If all of the questions under Iowa law get dragged into federal court under the diversity jurisdiction, the only way to stop guessing is to ask the state court for a real opinion.
What? I suppose that's true of all diversity cases, at least ones.
No, it's not. Look, most diversity cases arise in a field where there's plenty of litigation in the state court, too. And some of it comes to federal court. This question seems to be one in which the defendants are always ensuring that it's in federal court, leaving the federal court to guess about what state law is.
Well, that may be true. But nevertheless, the district court in this case essentially solved that problem by just falling back on the rule of the forum, Illinois, and didn't even attempt to predict Iowa law, didn't cite any Iowa cases in its decision. And my opponent, of course, because the Illinois Supreme Court ruled the way it did in the Valley Forge case midway through this case, has shifted from strenuously arguing that Iowa law applies to strenuously arguing that Iowa law is no different from Illinois law. We submit that that's not correct. The choice of law was settled here by stipulation, and that renders all other choice of law considerations irrelevant in most cases and in this case. This is not a default rule case where no one argued the choice of law or cared to argue the choice of law. We both argued that Iowa law applied. And indeed, there is some authority from the Iowa Supreme Court which is informative here. And the Talen case and the Kabee case both looked at this type of policy language, including a list of torts. In both cases, one of those torts was invasion of privacy, described in very similar language to the policy language at issue here. They said this is a list of torts, that if it doesn't come within...
Yeah, but both of those cases had exclusions in them, right? They contained... In Kibbe, it was exclusion of mental anguish. In Kalen, it was exclusion of breach of contract. And the Iowa court relied on the exclusion. So it seems to me those cases are not relevant to your problem.
Kibbe didn't have an exclusion for mental anguish. Mental anguish was actually one of the other covered categories. But the question, we're not claiming it's directly on point. What we're saying is...
Well, I don't think it's on point at all. You've got exclusions.
Well, the point that we're trying to make is that if you disagree with American states, as some courts have, and you say that seclusion is covered just as secrecy is covered, then the question becomes, is this an intrusion upon seclusion case? All courts nationwide, which have looked at the question...
I don't disagree with anything. I'm just trying to find out what the Iowa Supreme Court would make out of it.
Well, the Iowa Supreme Court, as this court did in American states, held that this kind of policy language must be interpreted in context. The terms are not to be interpreted in isolation. And that is the line of cleavage between the courts which have held that there's coverage under the TCPA and that there's not coverage under the TCPA. The courts that have held, like this court in American states, that there's not coverage for the TCPA.
Could you please use English?
I'm sorry, it's the telephone consumer...
I don't know what TCPA is.
The Telephone Consumer Protection Act that prohibits unsolicited faxes, or the fax statute, I'll call it. All of the courts which have found that this is not covered have looked at the invasion of privacy language in the policy and have held that this is a reference to a tort. The courts which have interpreted the invasion of privacy language in context outside of the fax statute context have uniformly held that the question of whether there's coverage under the invasion of privacy language depends on whether the underlying case meets the elements of that tort, much like a 12B6 motion. And policyholders have tried to squeeze everything from environmental contamination to sexual harassment cases into the invasion of privacy language. And the analysis consistently has been, does this meet the elements of the recognized tort of invasion of privacy? And with respect to intrusion upon seclusion, Iowa and most other jurisdictions follow Section 652B of the Restatement, which holds that the intrusion, in order to be actionable, must be highly offensive to a reasonable person. And that's where this case couldn't possibly meet the elements of an intrusion upon seclusion. And all the, we're talking about a piece of paper, one piece of paper with some non-offensive writing on it that a dentist finds in his fax machine when he comes in the morning. And as the court said in American States, as this court said in American States, one fax is surely less disturbing than one phone call. And there's a large body of law, the phone call cases, under the 652B of the Restatement, which uniformly hold that a single telephone call, even a call from a debt collector, even a call using offensive language, is not actionable as an intrusion upon seclusion. So there we have it. If one fax is less disturbing than one phone call, and one phone call could never be highly offensive in order to establish an intrusion upon seclusion, then this case isn't even close. It can't be an intrusion upon seclusion. And that's where we get back to the Iowa cases, to answer your question, Judge Cudahy. Both of those cases say, when they're looking at a list of offenses in a policy, which includes invasion of privacy, they say this is a reference to torts. Other
yeah,
courts.
Both the all three of the cases, you cited three cases, I think, but two of them at least can involve exclusions, which would decide the case apart from the point that you're making. So I don't really see why they tell us what Iowa Supreme Court is bound to do in this case.
Well, with respect to the specific issue that we're talking about, they use the term specific legal wrongs and specific torts to refer to the invasion of privacy. Now, that differs from jurisdictions like Illinois, which look at the invasion of privacy language as just sort of a loose description of attributes of any number of different causes of action. And so that is the indication. The two Supreme Court cases and the appellate court case in Iowa are a very good indication that Iowa follows the contextual approach that this court outlined in American States. And in any event, if the court didn't find any helpful authority in Iowa and were deciding the case as a matter of first principles, as it did in American States, then it should follow American States, as many other judges have, notwithstanding the fact that Illinois hasn't. We're not applying Illinois law here. We're applying Iowa law, notwithstanding my opponent's vigorous attempts to argue otherwise. Unless there are any questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Edelman.
May it please the court, counsel. At this point, a majority of courts have held that the phrase publication of material that violates...
I don't know what you mean by majority. I've tried very hard to find decisions by state Supreme Courts on this question and have found only two, Illinois and Vermont. Are there decisions I've missed?
Just the Massachusetts case, which effectively
was
attempting to...
That's not a decision. They're trying to predict New Jersey, and I wouldn't want to predict New Jersey either.
Are there
any cases in which states, Supreme Courts of states, have interpreted their domestic law? So we have an authoritative ruling rather than a guess about some third jurisdiction.
Well, I think
other than Illinois or Vermont, are there any others that you know of? There may be, but they're well hidden.
No, Your Honor. You have some intermediate appellate decisions.
So we've got And they disagree.
And you have a split of authority.
Certification is one possibility, which you suggest as an alternative at the end of your brief. Does the Supreme Court of Iowa accept certifications?
Absolutely. And I think...
What rule says that? I've been trying to find the rules of the Supreme Court of Iowa about certifications without notable success.
I believe we cited in our brief, it's a statute that invites 684A.1 of the Iowa Code at page 29 of our brief. They do accept certified questions.
Maybe looking for their rules was a mistake.
It is done by statute there.
This part of your brief doesn't cite any state statute. Am I missing something? Is it page 34, 35 of your brief? It cites this court's Rule 52, but that gets us only halfway.
Well, I was just looking at our table of authorities, and we do reference 684A.1 on page... and I'm not finding the site on page 29.
Do a certification.
But there is a state statute that authorizes certification. We requested.
I would appreciate it, since my own research has obviously been incomplete. If one or the other or both of you would inform us by letter after argument where we can find the Iowa authority to certify.
I will do that, Your Honor, and I will provide a copy.
Yeah, okay.
I think it is a desirable course of action under this circumstance. The basic reason states have these statutes is to avoid infringement of the rights of the states to determine what their own law should be. This is purely a question of state law. Under Claxton, this court is in effect sitting as the Illinois court and attempting to determine what the Iowa court would do. There's no Iowa authority that's closely...
Well, our predicting ability is obviously limited. In American states, we predicted that Illinois would do what Vermont had already done. And then Illinois didn't do it, and now we're tied 1-1. And goodness only knows where we go from there.
That is correct, Your Honor, and certification would... I think obtain an appropriate answer from the only source that can definitively...
Well, it will obtain an answer. And given our positivist approach, since it's an authentic answer by the state court, it will be appropriate. But
if Your Honors are not inclined to certify it, while there is nothing closely in point in Iowa, Iowa does adhere even more strongly to the principle of the reasonable layperson construction that the Illinois Supreme Court followed in Valley Forge. I think the reasoning that the Illinois court used in Valley Forge in disagreeing with American states was whether you look at the policy language from the standpoint of a legal expert or do you look at it from the standpoint of a layperson. Iowa actually goes further than Illinois in that regard, and I don't think that auto owners disputes this in their brief or an argument. Iowa adheres to the so-called reasonable expectations doctrine, under which if an insurer uses broad and vague promises and doesn't make very clear any limitations or exclusions, coverage is found, even if a close reading of the policy by an expert would negate coverage. In this case, since you have a split of authority, it's somewhat difficult to hold that a reasonable layperson could not reasonably find coverage under this policy. In fact, the right of privacy language has been found not to describe specific torts, but to be vague and ambiguous, going back well before the events that give rise to this case.
I'm puzzled by that line of argument. Suppose that instead of sending a fax, a letter with identical contents had been sent. Do you think that would produce a claim under a policy written as this policy is, because the letter arriving in the mailbox violates a right of privacy?
If some rule of law prohibited the sending of the letter, yes. For example, if there were a do not mail list and somebody violated that,
There's a federal do not call list and there's a federal anti-junk mail list.
I think that a violation of that prohibition might well be found to give rise to coverage.
You think the ordinary layperson in Iowa would view junk mail as violating his right to privacy? I bet if you did a poll, they would say ordinary junk mail is pestiferous, but is it the same as sticking a camera in the bedroom? No, I think people in Iowa could distinguish between these two.
I think the relevant inquiry is not the specific type of privacy violation. I think the policy, having been found to be ambiguous, should be interpreted to cover any kind of statutory or common law claim that that is brought under either a statute or a common law principle that says that it protects privacy rights, is commonly referred to or has been held by courts to protect privacy rights. The Telephone Consumer Protection Act junk fax prohibition has been so held. I think that a layperson who is purchasing this type of coverage is likely to be generally, although not specifically, familiar with the fact that there are statutes which protect privacy interests and regulate junk faxes, junk mails, unsolicited phone calls.
Actually, lay people don't purchase this kind of policy, do they?
I think a lay business person would, and generally they would purchase it without the assistance of an attorney to go through the provisions with them. They see a generic reference to rights of privacy. They have a general understanding of their statutes which afford such protections. And I think that a business person who buys this is going to think that if I or one of my employees does something inappropriate and we screw up and we incur liability, we've got coverage. And then we're told by the insurance company after the issue arises, no, this only covers, I guess, one of the four common law privacy torts, doesn't cover statutory offenses, and only under the law of Iowa, even though the policy expressly gives coverage throughout the United States, names by name non-common law jurisdictions where the only claim would be statutory. I think that what we suggest, given the division of authority, is the correct reading of the policy at this point in time where you have cases going both ways. And, of course, the court can eliminate any lack of clarity by simply asking the Iowa Supreme Court what it believes. One of the problems is that this court is not exercising its own view of what the law should be or what the policy should be construed. It is sitting under Claxton as an Illinois court attempting to determine what another state Supreme Court would do. The court below, following Judge Kennelly in American Home, basically adopted what I think is solid Illinois law and saying that unless somebody shows me that the foreign court would disagree with the Illinois court, we're going to follow the forum state, that is the rule of law of the Illinois Supreme Court. And simply, I think, underscores the desirability of a certification in this case. The insurance industry attempts to file in federal court, if at all possible. We're the defendant in this case. We have urged both below and in this court the certification as a means of clearly resolving this issue. And we would again urge that course of action be followed, and I will supply the text of the statute.
So before you sit down, I take it from your last set of remarks that you're withdrawing your choice of law argument?
No, Your Honor, absolutely not. I think that the choice of law argument, and I'm relying on the briefs to some extent, is that this court is sitting as an Illinois state court. The Illinois choice of law methodology is, unless somebody shows by briefing that the law of another state differs from that of Illinois, we're going to assume that it is the same as Illinois law.
See why that would be relevant in federal court.
I think it's required by Claxton. Claxon requires the application of state substantive law, including both determination of what state applies and the methodology for ascertaining what that state's substantive rules
like
are.
It's a question of methodology. It sounds like a statement of laziness. Federal judges aren't as lazy as state judges, and therefore we can actually look at what Iowa law might be. It sounds like a statement that if they don't show us that Iowa law is different, we're not going to consult the decisions of the Supreme Court of Iowa.
I disagree.
We don't have Iowa cases in our chambers or something like that.
I disagree.
But that just doesn't sound like a substantive principle that would affect a federal court.
I disagree, Your Honor. The statement has been made in cases such as Emerson where the law of the foreign state was briefed but found to be inconclusive, which I think is a fair statement of the situation here. And I think it does represent a substantive rule of law, whether it, regardless of the motive.
And what do you think the bearing of Solvay Regina College then is?
I'm sorry, I'm not.
In Solvay Regina, the Supreme Court says that in diversity cases, the U.S. Court of Appeals must always make its own independent decision about what the law of the relevant jurisdiction is. Iowa law has been stipulated to govern here, and Solvay Regina says that we must make an independent decision about what Iowa law is. I mean, certainly Solvay Regina doesn't sound like, oh, well, you can just take time off and presume it's the same as the home state.
I must admit lack of familiarity with that decision. I did look at Claxon and ascertain its current status, and I have not, I did not find that it was cut back by suggesting that.
I don't think the justices thought that that had anything whatever to do with Claxon.
Well, I apologize, Your Honor. I don't believe that decision has been addressed by either party in its briefs. But I will examine it. Unless Your Honors have some other questions, that concludes my comments. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Aylward. Anything further, Mr. Osborne?
Very briefly, Your Honor. The Illinois rule with regard to whether the default rule applies, which is whether the home state rule applies, is, according to the Illinois Supreme Court from just last year in the Barbara Sales case, whether the choice of law may have an outcome determinative difference. So may have obviously means that the law in the target state may be unsettled. The rule is not, in other words, that you have to show me a case from Iowa which is directly on point, which controls this, or otherwise I'm applying Illinois law. That's what the district court did, and that's wrong. That's what my opponent has been arguing throughout this case, and that's wrong. We stipulated to Iowa law, and therefore, the court must predict Iowa law. It's as simple as that. And Iowa law is not without any help whatsoever. If you look
well,
at
it's
it,
close.
Well, it's very little, but it's more than what was offered from Illinois in the American States case, for example.
Yeah, and look where that got us.
Yes. Well, but I believe more courts have followed American States than have disagreed with it.
Now, what's
certainly
wrong with Judge Kennelly's opinion?
Well, Judge Kennelly's opinion doesn't cite very much Iowa law. It only cites Iowa cases for these very general principles that, you know, the duty to defend is broader than the duty to indemnify and the ambiguity rule. And they say, well, that's the same as Illinois, so I'm applying Illinois law. But those rules are also the same.
We cite a lot more Illinois cases, but they're not very relevant. That's the only.
Well, I think the Illinois cases are no more relevant than cases from any other jurisdiction. And all of the jurisdictions which have found that there's no coverage under the TCPA have observe all of the same general contract interpretation rules. So Judge Kennelly's analysis, I think, is flawed. Both Judge Kennelly and Judge Norgel should have started with Iowa law and worked up from there. And if there wasn't anything in Iowa law, then you go back to first principles, the way the court did in American States, and which judge after judge
Thank
has said
much, counsel.
Is sound. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will take a brief recess before calling.